Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedy is in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedy is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless. And it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are much important, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or ANJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy is in the Law. And Your Remedy is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights. Anything that you can think of. And if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much in the way you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look at these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, so winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make, if your remedy is in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedy is in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. Again, we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if the remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if we can dispose properly and then answer properly, then we can all learn something from it.
All right, Martin, thank you so very much for giving us that disclaimer. Ladies and gentlemen, the 30,000-foot view tonight is on two subjects. One, our speaker, John, will be sharing with us the power behind a Latin phrase, which is, quote, non assumpsit, end quote. And the other topic tonight that he will be talking about, and you've heard us talk about this now the past few weeks, about the young man. I've learned recently that he was actually a student of David Strait. Woefully unprepared, untrained, unvetted, died, and to quote the theatrical comment of In a Hail of Gunfire, where he had literally antagonized police and produced a weapon and paid the result of it. This struck home to John in a very personal capacity, our speaker tonight, and he will share with that a reflection upon it. But before we get started, we have a first-time caller from Bonner's Ferry, I guess that's Idaho, ending in 2795. Would you like to share with us how you heard about us tonight?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness, yes, you.
Well, thank you. That's a surprise. I didn't think I'd get on the call because my cell phone didn't work. This is the old landline, so I'm trying to understand.
Is
anyway, I found out. Yes.
Is this Trish?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Trish.
Hi.
Welcome to the call.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right.
Wasn't sure I was through. It's a good thing I didn't talk. Didn't know I was audible.
There you go. All right. Yeah. So welcome to the call. Thank you so much. I'm going to mute you back out, and we're going to get into the call now. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn this call over to Brother John, and let's hear what he has to say.
Good evening, Michael and Martin. Thank you for your kind and gracious introductions. And welcome, Patricia. I guess that's Patricia. Yeah, that's what Patricia's short for. But sometimes when we chat with people, the fact that they bear some authority in the matter sometimes persuades us or causes us to develop a concern for how we act. And sometimes we even say or do things that we wouldn't ordinarily do. And to that end, we find ourselves almost, in certain cases, intimidated by the way that person may act, whether it's, the principal or the teacher or a judge or a constable or a law enforcement officer or any one of a handful of individuals, we can sometimes find ourselves unpleasantly pressured in or feeling pressured into doing something that we might not ordinarily do, or signing something that we might not ordinarily sign. And it's okay to feel that pressure, and usually that pressure is born out of some level of ignorance, meaning that I just don't know what this is about, or I don't know the gravity of that situation. And so to that end, we find ourselves asking ourselves, why are we involved in this? And sometimes that other person may have a gun that that they wear specifically for the purpose of doing their job and doing their job correctly. And so to that end, a lot of times we'll have individuals that they carry a gun, and we've even heard of people using that gun to defend themselves. And we don't want to offend them. And so even though they may not say something that feels threatening, we feel intimidated. And whether they realize we're intimidated or not by them doesn't seem to have any bearing in their mind. At least that's the way we look at it. And that old saying about perception becomes nine-tenths of reality begins to take effect. To that end, if we find ourselves in an uncomfortable situation, the best thing you can do is smile and act very pleasantly toward the individual that you're engaging. And if they, if the officer even asks you to sign a ticket, even though that taillight being out is not an arrestable offense, technically, if you don't sign your written promise to appear, then they do what they used to do in the old days. In the old days, there was they didn't have what was called own recognizance, or personal recognizance, or personal bond, or PR bond. What happened was that in the old days, when there was perceived transgression of the law, because an individual is innocent until proven guilty. And even though the individual wasn't under arrest for the taillight, they were quietly marched down to the courthouse to pay bail, whatever. And the bail was always minimum equal to what the fine would be for that that light bulb being out. And technically, you were not under arrest, although most people say, ha, 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 yeah, right, not, hey, I'm being marched down to the courthouse and my vehicle's being towed, or if they were gracious enough, they'd let you secure it on the roadside or in a parking lot of the diner where you got pulled over, the parking lot of the gas station, at the gas station attendant's approval. And then you go down and at least pay the fine. And if you believe you're innocent, they would let you pay the fine, and then you could appear before the magistrate. And what they did was, so that you didn't have to wait, if you got stopped at 6:30 p.m., oh, wait a minute, the judge has usually gone home. You just committed a fraction. Ouch. This has got to be handled. And even in courts of common law, whether it was statute law or common law, the same process prevailed. And what happened was that if the judge was in, you went to see the judge and, you know, you explained whatever, and he could say, you know what, I believe you, you didn't do it, or you didn't intentionally do it, so I'm going to let you go this time, and maybe he'd let you go right there. Or he'd say, you know what, I've got to wait till I want to hear more about this matter, so I'm going to ask you to post the fine, and then you can, go about your way. But you had to post that bail. Well, it got to the point where there was the populace grew so great that what happened was that having everybody lined up overnight for a judge, taking care of feeding them, making sure they had comfort facilities, places for them to stay, you know, the Gray Bar Hotel or Club Fed, you know, whichever, however you want to call that magic resort, you know, they got to the place where that was too expensive a proposition. And when a governor's son in upstate New York got pulled over for a bumper hanging down and had to sit, and this was not on a newer vehicle, this was on a 1926 Model A, it was on a Friday evening, and they wouldn't release him until he saw the judge on Monday morning, and then it turns out that the bumper was hanging down, a safety issue, was dragging it. It was because the bolt fell out, and it happened after he got into it that day, so he didn't even know he was leaving with the bumper hanging down. After spending 3 days in jail, then being released without having to pay a fine because it was clearly an incident, they got a little bent. In fact, this particular occupant of the catbird seat for that state was more than just bent. And what happened was that they instituted a policy where working with the local judiciary, they instituted a policy with which, instead of dragging them in to pay the fee or the fine, they started releasing them on own recognizance or personal responsibility, PR bonds. And what that is that when an individual gets stopped and there's an alleged violation, remember I say alleged because the individual is innocent until proven guilty. And even though the taillight's dead right there, how do we know what, why, how that taillight, the who, what, when, where, how, and why that taillight got out? Did some young children with a slingshot and a marble pop it out while he was waiting at the light, and the gentleman has no, and now we're going to put him through the meat grinder? Oh, holy broken tree feathers, Batman. You know, I mean, we got to, you know, if this guy says he was honest, you know, it was working when he left and it wasn't broken, well, gosh golly gee willikers, you know, he's got the right to have his day in court. And a lot of other states began to consider the same possibility. One particular one, after a judge, a superior court judge in Central California, and I'm not going to say what city he was in, but was stopped for a headlight. And of all things, somebody else actually saw the headlight damaged when a rock was kicked up by a vehicle in front of him. But the officer wouldn't believe that he was a Superior Court judge. He spent part of Friday night and early Saturday morning when he finally got his call. And this officer was eventually given vacation, a week and a half vacation, 10 days to be exact, to take time off to enjoy the fruits of his labor without pay. They began implementing this policy of own recognizance or PR bond. And what it was is that you began to sign your written promise to appear so that they didn't take you in to go see a judge or a clerk to pay the equivalent of that fee, that fine. And to that end, you weren't required anymore to pay it immediately. Then if you decide to plead guilty, then you just pay the fine. And sometimes you can plead not guilty, and they would still ask you to pay the equivalent, you know, of a fine in the form of bail, so that if you, you know, if you lost your plea, you know, that they would just go ahead and keep what you had paid. There began some practice in a little-known state called Georgia, back then in a suburb of Atlanta, where somebody accused an individual. They said that on the ticket, they agreed, this prosecutor says, well, you signed the ticket, you already agreed to it, and that they actually got a conviction, and this prosecutor, who only survived 3.5 years in that position before he was removed, he never worked in jurisprudence again. The complaint was so great, but individuals began to, when they heard about this, people who knew what they were doing began to use a term called non-assumption. And for those of you who are not familiar with it or how to spell it, it's non-assume. And everybody knows how to spell assume. It's just making an ass out of you and me, A-S-S-U-M-E, except instead of an E there, it's A-S-S-U-M-P. And then sit, like sitting down in the car, non-assumption. And what it means is that you're not agreeing to any charges, conviction, or that any allegations that are there, and that in certain states, non-assumption has an extremely specific definition, meaning that you actually were feeling like you were pressured into signing something that that you did not want to, and in because of this one prosecutor, and by the way, within a year of that prosecutor starting that, it spread like wildfire across the nation. And there was a handful of years that it got really bad, where individuals, when they signed the ticket, they were saying they were agreeing to the charges, and a lot of people wouldn't sign the ticket, and they would, not realizing that that was technically a PR, but they didn't know that it was only a personal recognizance bond, or a own recognizance or personal responsibility bond. And they didn't know that this quote-unquote agreement thing was dead wrong, that the whole policy in principle was absolutely wrong. So what happened was that individuals started encouraging their friends and their students to sign it non-assumption, so that they could take advantage of the PR bond, the personal responsibility bond, or own responsibility, and not have to get carted down to the police station or the vacation spot at Club Fed, you know, and so that they could take advantage of being able to allow to doodle on down the highway less than 10 minutes after they got stopped. Now, there are some individuals, young individuals, more young than older, and some of us are even younger than others, and it was murder 23. I don't know what I'm going to do when I hit 26, you know, but I'd like to believe that I'm still teachable, and which makes me a young person. If I'm not teachable, then I have to ask myself what I'm doing here and how old am I. There's an old saying, you can correct a wise man and he'll thank you, but you would try to correct a fool and he'll rage and scoff and there'll be no peace. And trying to correct a fool is like trying to teach a pig to sing. Murphy's Law, never try to teach a pig to sing. It annoys the pig and it wastes your time. Trying to correct a fool is it annoys the fool and it wastes your time. And every morning, I personally have to ask myself this question. John, what are you going to be today? Are you going to be a wise man or are you going to be a fool? And so to that end, when individuals correct me, I try to take the premise that every man and every woman is my superior that I might learn from them. Every man and every woman is my teacher that I might learn from them. And to that end, sometimes, you know, that person that we learn from might be that traffic officer that theoretically he's been sworn under oath to protect and serve. And he's, remember, this is a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And when the people don't have time, aren't, don't feel safe, don't have the skills, or don't have the training, or just don't have the capacity to do a job, they hire help. You know, air traffic controllers, forestry workers, governors, presidents, judges, sheriffs. Oh, by the way, those last four, they're just temp help. But, you know, police officers, remember, they're hired help. They work for you. They work for us. Does a good employer ever browbeat their employee, or are they ever rude or unkind to them? For the 8 hours that these guys are getting paid that day, or 10 or 12 if it's a, you know, long day, or if they're working a 4-10 work week, you know, that's, but they're still, for those 8 or 10 or 12 hours, they're subjugating their rights to ours with a fiduciary responsibility to look out for our needs and for our person and our blood. And they have been sworn to uphold the law and on our behalf, at our behest. We hired them, not anybody else. And just because you or I wasn't personally at that interview, we're the ones that hired them. They're hired by the people. Now, and for those 8 hours, they are subjugating their rights temporarily to us. And yes, the sheriff and the judge and the president and the governor, yes, they are all, for those 8 hours that that governor's in that office or the president's, you know, sitting in the Oval Office, they're subjugating, they are responsible to us. This misconception that they're sovereigns and that, you know, we report to them, that's something that, and then sometimes a little bit of power corrupts a little bit and a lot of power corrupts a lot of it. It's the perception that their job responsibility is that they're in power. He who would be the greatest among you would be the servant of even the least. They are the servants of the people, even the president. And, for those individuals there, you know, those inalienable rights that are retained by the people that cannot be alienated, were never surrendered or abdicated to the hired help. That's just a side note. But, and at the same time, some of them do get a little arrogant and color outside the lines. But hopefully none of you have ever met anybody like that, or a sheriff or a judge or a president or a police officer. But in the event that they do color outside the lines with the arrogance of their ill consideration, it's not our place to put them in their place when they're in that courtroom or on that traffic stop. Quite the opposite. It's our place to give them an unconditional measure of respect and consideration, regardless of the fact that whether they're actually worthy, have worked for it, earned it, and deserve it or not. We give them unconditional respect. It's, good evening, or good afternoon, Your Honor. How are you doing? Or good evening, officer. How are you doing? Or good morning, officer. Or good day, deputy. It's, you know, unconditional. And if they're one of these people that their self-esteem is so low that the only way they could find it is by taking a job that had some authority so they could feel like they could wield a billy club or a stick or a Smith & Wesson 686 stainless steel 357 revolver, or a Beretta 92FS, you know, 9mm, then we obviously have a problem. You do not ever want to become the focal point of their problem. And sometimes their paranoia and their anger is contagious, especially amongst their coworkers. When when it comes down to the fact that, you know, if a box boy or a bellman does a good job, the first thing that happens is somebody wants to put put some coin or some cash in the hand of that box boy or that bellman. If they do a good job, a Leo or a law enforcement officer or a local sheriff or sheriff deputy or a police officer, they do a good job. One out of every three individuals that they do their good job with has this nasty premonition, and they get this mind picture of having this public servant suck on a .38 caliber straw. You know, that's way, way wrong, and it's very counterproductive. And to that end, because the individuals do threaten them regularly, and I have had personal friends, including a next-door neighbor who was the chief of a motor division for a law enforcement agency in Southern California. Somebody, when he went up to ask them for their license and their insurance, the driver, seeming very friendly and quite pleasant, reached out to hold out his driver's license and his insurance certificate. When the officer was reaching to take it from him, he grabbed the officer's arm and took off, dragging the officer with him, drug him 2.5 miles down a street until coming near some railroad tracks, let the officer go, and he part his legs were both broken underneath the rear wheels as he was let go. When that's the way individuals treat others, and not 2 days later, less than a block from that same place, another officer from the same jurisdiction, somebody was writing a ticket and handing it to the individual that was committing something less than kind on the road. His friends drove up and hit the officer, veered, hit the officer, knocked him over 100 feet away, and then the individual he gave the ticket to ran him over. Okay? This is the type of overly thoughtful consideration that these individuals that are sworn to protect and serve sometimes get when they are trying to enforce what they appear to they believe is to do the right thing and the right law. Now, what happens if, wait a minute, this person wasn't subject to the jurisdiction of that specific allegation, or that they weren't actually violating that particular statute? They're not actually subject to it because they happen to be a sovereign citizen, or maybe an American national, or maybe they have a green covered U.S. passport, which means that they're a diplomat, and or foreign diplomatic passport. Well, to prevent chaos, until a person's status is clearly identified, everyone is responsible to respond to the officer or any law enforcement officer worldwide by UN treaty and by World Court ruling in The Hague in 1952, okay? In January of 1952. Everyone is, until their status is recognized, they're required by World Court statute, World Court law and world statute to respond to the law enforcement individuals, even if they're corrupt federales in Mexico City, you know. And what you do is, you know that old thing, we've got a fire burning in the house, so, well, let's throw some more fire on it, and it just gets hotter. No. There's an old saying, a gentle answer turns away wrath. It's fight fire with water. Smile at them. Well, thank you, kind sir. I'm sorry I don't speak good Spanish. Thank you for the ticket. Gracias, you know, you share what you can and treat them with dignity and respect, even if they're absolutely corrupt. Get past the place where they're, if they are corrupt, that jurisdiction will preside over you. I know some individuals that one of them, he's incredibly strong, and this officer proceeded to pull a gun on him. At the time, James didn't tell him that he was a federal marshal. But this young cocky, he looked like a young Rutger Hauer, grabbed him, pulled him out of the car, and he started handcuffing him. And when he realized he was carrying a gun and patting him down underneath his jacket, screamed gun, and he laid him on the ground, bruised him up really badly. His partner and two other individuals, and I was sitting in the left seat in the rear, he was sitting in the right seat in the rear, and he was bloodied up and his chin was badly bruised up, because the guy was standing on top of his head with his boot and had mushed into the ground. But he was very kind to him. Had he attempted to say anything or reject or his authority or sell him who he was, this young kid, who was only about 5 years younger than he was, would have beat him up badly or shot him. Finally, they rolled him over, opened up his jacket after he reached, you know, they got the gun out of his shoulder holster first, but afterward they rolled him over, and it's like, whoops, holy kitty litter, Batman, that's a U.S. Marshal's bat in his jacket pocket there, you know. And one of the other deputies says, stop, you back up, step away now. He told the young officer, back then he was older than me. He was in his 30s. I was in my late 20s. And he told him, you stand back there. And he says, are you really a federal marshal? And he nodded. He didn't even say. He just nodded. And he says, I'm so sorry. He says, are you on duty right now? And he nodded that he was. And he says, the gentleman with you, is he a federal marshal? And he says, no. Is he with you? Yes. Are these all with you? Are you on an active case? And he nodded yes. And turns out that the kid didn't even tell us why he was pulled over. This was the hubcap on the right rear was about to come off. That's why he originally stopped the vehicle. Without saying a thing, the federal marshal, they unhandcuffed him. And the gentleman who was in the front right seat was also a federal marshal at the time. The driver was not. We end up going down to the sheriff's station, and that deputy sheriff was graciously stripped of his shield and badge and piece and his uniform right there, and they asked the federal marshal if he wanted to press charges and for assault and battery, and he did. He acknowledged that he did, and he was terminated right there. But Michael Edwards has some videos of some events that would curl your teeth. I may also have the access to those, but what I'm going to ask you to do is to give Michael a call and an email or a text, and he'll send you links to a couple of events, one of them or some photos that you'll see where somebody, a 25-year-old, gets shot to death because he doesn't handle it properly. He did have a gun, and he should have held his hands up on the steering wheel and says, deputy or officer, there is a gun on the floor underneath my seat. It's mine. I carry it for protection. I'm going to keep my hands on the steering wheel until you open the door and reach in and remove the gun so that you feel safe. He should have said something like that. He'd still be alive today. But he was very resistive. He was a little arrogant, a little unkind. And, two nights ago, I got a call from a young 20-year-old named Diane, and she drives on something called an International Motors Qualification. Her parents are naturalized citizens, and although, her parents were in Europe when Diane was born, she's a U.S. citizen, and she's an American national, she's an American national, and she has her status corrected. She has a passport card. She's part of a homeschool coalition that she does not have a social security number, but Diane, they got stopped by L.A. County Sheriff, two nights ago, and I spent 48 minutes on the phone. She had a 22-year-old male in the car that is part of he studied under someone about sovereignty and was antagonizing the officers. She didn't have to show it to you, et cetera. You know, and what happened was that Diane had me on the Bluetooth on the car radio, and when they were back checking Diane's IMQ and her insurance, it went from one car, one individual, to eight cars and 14 LA County sheriffs. And I found out yesterday that there were also two California Highway Patrol vehicles also showed up. And this was in the evening hours two nights ago. And the 22-year-old male was shooting off his mouth about, she doesn't have to show you that, you know, and everything else. And he was, it took me, I was on the, Diane dialed me very quickly, and the guy says, what are you doing that? You know, he says, well, this gentleman, and we had helped her get her, originally her passport without a social security number many, many years ago. When her parents were traveling back and forth to Europe with her as an infant, you know, and this is her fourth passport that we helped get without a social security number. I may have been doing this for a year or two or three, but the officers asked, well, who are you talking to? I says, good evening. My name is John. You know, I'm whom do I have the honor and privilege of addressing? And the deputy said, Deputy Schmidt. I says, an honor and privilege to meet you, Deputy Schmidt. And as he was talking, he says, who are you? I says, well, she said, he's my legal counsel. The guy, all of a sudden, when she said that, he says, okay, you realize what I've got here, you know, and we're going to have to take these under arrest, you know. And it turns out they stopped her for a license plate light. And this turned into almost an hour and a half event because the kid was shooting off his mouth. We talked for a little bit. He says, you know, they wouldn't give me the insurance. They wouldn't give me her, you know, and this guy is with her. And I says, I asked him, I says, are you going to, consider her disposition equivalent to this gentleman who is not necessarily speaking for her, but speaking for himself. You know, and the kid shot off. You know, and finally he shut up, and I just stopped. I didn't argue with him. I let him vent, and oh, he came up with some colorful metaphors for the police and for me. And they were tapping on the glass of the other window and demanding that he get out of the car. And we managed to talk with him, with the Deputy Schmidt, and finally got things back down. They were at DEFCON 2. It was almost about to go to 1, global thermonuclear war. And although there wasn't a firearm in the car, they had their guns drawn. And this kid had wound, you know, he was sovereign and there was this and that. And, you know, and he was from France. He was a naturalized U.S. citizen. And he believes he's a sovereign citizen, and his parents technically are sovereigns. But this kid, 22 years old, you can't teach us like this. This is, you know, BS and everything else. And he literally does speak French, and he spoke some French, and he spoke, if you catch my meaning, some English French, and made these people very, very upset. And this guy says, "Who are you?" And I says, "Well, you remember Deputy Chief Daryl Gates a few years back, who was chief for a while?" He says, "Yeah, and who are you to him?" I says, "Well, here's his home phone number if you want to dial him, and here's the watch commander for CHP, Sean Hart, if you want to give him a call, and here's his home phone number, and he's home right now." He says, "So, what city do you live in?" I says, "Well, I don't live in Southern California." He says, "Well, what city do you live in?" I says, "I live in the Houston area of Texas." And he goes, "How do you know these people?" I says, "Well, Daryl and I are, and our families are family friends, and Sean, I went to school with since I was, in the fourth grade or third grade." And, he says, "Oh, so you used to live out here?" I says, "Yeah." And he says, "How long ago?" I says, "About 30 years ago. 35 years ago, I moved away." And this was unbelievably providential. And there's some old guy comes wandering in. He says, "Are you the same John that used to own a 74 Dodge Blue Coronet that you used to loan out to the sheriff's department for chases on Fridays and Saturday nights?" I says, "That would make you Deputy Wilson." And he started laughing and says, "It is the same John." He says, "Okay." And when he said that, things backed down. This kid, had we not had some common thread there, they were, Diane and this young gentleman were going to jail. And this kid had wound his clock really, really bad. The very next morning, I got pictures of an event that had just occurred where another young gentleman, less than pleasantly responsive to the constabulary in the state of Utah, the town that this occurred in, my son and I used to drive through regularly a couple of times a year, and we know how that town functions. We've been there when individuals that we were traveling with, a car right in front of us, we got pulled over, and we stopped about a half a block back, and they came out and cleared us out of the car, and they were very unkind about it, and they're very, very protective. And back then, back in 2004 when that happened, I learned the hard way in that town that those guys have had a hard life. Well, it turns out that 1 in 5 of the officers don't make it to their 10-year anniversary because they're killed in the line of action. They're KIA. So this little town, you know, and it's not hard for me to understand what happened and why it happened. Was it right? No way. But I do understand why it happened. So what happens is that it's extremely important that we remember that when we get stopped, that we offer, because they're wearing the uniform or the badge or the gown or wielding the gavel, where, regardless of who they are, the position that they're in is worthy of honor. Whether they work for, earned, or deserve the honor themselves is irrelevant. And it provides for a much more harmonious outcome of the day and reduces the blunt force trauma to the face and head region. And it also keeps the same, you know, us, you know, if you can go into a situation like this, you know, with, let's see, we've got two nostrils and mouth and two ears, you know, and so we count up the orifices, and if you can come in with the same amount of leave with the same amount of orifices you start with, then that's been a good day, you know, and if you can reduce or eliminate the blunt force trauma of the face and head region, that's a good thing also. And so treating these people with dignity and respect when you get stopped is of critically prime importance. And if you think something is dead wrong and you're not comfortable with it and they're asking you to sign your personal recognizance bond or your PR bond or your OR, own recognizance, then use the term non-assumpt, A-S-S-U-M-P-S-E-T. Look it up. Please get familiar with it. Don't leave home tomorrow without looking that up tonight. Make certain that you feel comfortable that regardless of how ugly somebody may treat you or how ugly it may get, that you know that you have a recourse that transcends any of their jurisdiction. And that is the term, when you sign it, that you sign below it, it says non-assumption. If you get arrested and they're asking you to sign the booking sheet. Now, the booking sheet just means that in most jurisdictions, and you can read it right there, that you've had your charges read to you, and you understand what the charges. That's it. If you don't understand the charges, sign it non-assumpt. And if you get into an unpleasant situation, please try to keep a pleasant demeanor. Try to keep your smile and use the term non-assumption. I cannot tell you, most of those guys out there, that if you do what I do when I get pulled over, I make sure that by the time I'm pulled over, especially at night, that the windows are, the first thing I do is roll all the windows down. And before I turn on the interior lights, I take my wallet out, I take my ID out, and I set it on the dash, and I pull the insurance paperwork out of the overhead, and I try to keep it either in the door pocket or the overhead so that they don't have to see me reaching for the glove box, worrying if I just pull the gun out of the glove box. But I make sure that the insurance and my ID are on the dash when I come to a stop. I turn the headlights off, but I leave the parking lights on. I turn the interior light on so that they can see who's in there. And if it's just me, they can see that my hands are on 10 and 2 on the steering wheel with the window open, regardless of how hot or cold it is outside, that it's fully open. And before they get out of their car, I take my keys out of the ignition and I toss them up into the dash, so that they realize that they're far enough from me that I cannot easily get to them, and I leave my seat belt on. And if I have to take off the seat belt to get the wallet out, I put the seat belt back on, you know, while I'm pulling over. Because the moment I see the bubble gum machine, the first thing I do is pull the wallet out. so that by the time I'm stopped, that's already up on the dash, so that when they get there, the lights are on, so especially if it's at night, so they can see in, see who's in there. And I ask everybody to put their hands on the back of this, you know, the one in the back. I ask them to put your hands either in your lap, folded in your lap, or put them on the back of the seat in front of you. And I ask the person on the right-hand side to put their hands on the dash, and I put my hands so that everybody, good evening, officer, how you doing? That way it backs the tension factor down immediately and provides for a much more harmonious outcome of the stop. With that, my time has come to a close. We're going to open it up for question and answer. If you if you'd like to continue the subject matter topic during Q&A, it's our honor and privilege to do so, and we appreciate that. However, Q&A is open to whatever subject matter topic you choose. With that, back to you, Martin and Michael.
Hey, Martin and Michael. Are you on? This is GW.
Hey. Hi, GW.
Hey, you're Brother John.
You're the man.
Oh, hey. No. You, the man, let me tell you.
No.
I love hearing.
No.
I love
you. We the team. We the
okay.
team. Yeah. No. We the team. We the team. That's the way this works. We the team. It's a.
All right. I love hearing
no
those stories
on this one. Everybody. Mm-hmm. It's a. Everybody. Everybody's a team. There's. You know. It takes a team to do what we do. That's
true.
It's
thank God. I have a question for you from one of my Brother John. I got a question for you from one of my students.
Okay.
And
how may I be an answer to question for you, brother?
Okay. He wanted to ask this. I told him all about you. He wanted to specifically ask this of you. And so I'm just restating it. He's had his he corrected his status. He's kind of a global globetrotter kind of a guy. He's all over the place and doing business all over the world. And I actually played his little audio on one of the calls one night where he had a where he used his new corrected status passport coming back into America, and it was it was really fabulous. The difference, okay, in how he was treated compared to
hey
all
there.
The times he's...
Hello, everybody.
Hey, Michael.
Is that Michael? Did you finally find the mute button?
No. What happened was you were just wrapping up, getting ready to bring me in, and my phone hung up on the call.
Oh, okay.
Like it was, and just it just hung up. So I had to dial back in, and anyways,
well, okay.
Welcome.
Well, GW is in the process of finishing a question here. Can we, and then we'll go field for the audience, for our listeners.
Okay, real good. Thank you, GW.
Go ahead,
no
GW,
problem.
Continue.
So anyway, his name is Derek, and he just asked me this question. I think I already kind of know the answer, but I – He basically he's got he uses Global Entry, John, and
you know,
he has Global Entry card and expires in 2025, and so about a month ago he logged into his Global Entry account and noticed that he could update to his present passport information, which he did. Okay, and so he says my question for Brother John is it safe for me to use my Global Entry now that it's updated with my new, passport information and with my new status and everything. He says when I travel overseas, and he's planning to go in a couple months. So what would you say?
For those of you who don't know what Global Entry is, it's called a trusted traveler program. And what it does is it expedites you. If you ever fly on through and go through the airports, a lot of times you'll see these badges that say the word known, K-N-O-W-N. And You never see so many people with the same first name known. But what happens is that it's doing the same thing as those, because they the crew members, the flight crews, the ramp agents, the ticket gate agents, they all wear these badges known, so that as they're passing through security, that they realize that they've been vetted and screened to a higher level. And global entry is the same thing for passengers, for their civilians. And so what it is that it's a U.S. Customs and Border Protection program that it's a pre-approval for low-risk travelers when they're traveling throughout the world. And a lot of other countries are accepting the U.S. Global Entry Program right now. And they have these little kiosks that you go in there, and it's not just a card. You've got to have your card there, and there's a fingerprint scan. And what happens is that it's basically approving you for a less intensive security audit there and surveillance. So it's a good thing. Having worked for an airline for many years and having retired from what is now the largest airline in the free world, it's something that if you can put up with it, you can get it, go for it. It makes your life traveling a whole lot easier. I'm that tall, funny-looking, dumb jamoke in the lime green wheelchair that gets the worst of the surveillance from the proctologist every single time, whether I've got a GE card or not, you know, a global entry card or whatever. So to me, it doesn't do anything any better for me. But there are a lot of people that like that convenience. To me, it's your personal choice. You are giving up a little bit more personal information. You're a little more documented. They know a little bit more about you and everything. It's a trade-off. But GW, for you, yeah, go for it.
Well, it wouldn't be for me, but it would be for Derek. Well, the funny thing is his testimony about it, you know, was so stark to him, you know, when he traveled from Mexico City this last time and came into somewhere in Texas, forget which airport it was, but you know, it was the fastest little turnaround, because he gave him, you know, he walked through, gave him the card, as he had his eyes in the eye scanner, and the guy took his passport, and it took about him about 4 seconds, looked up, and he just says, "Have a nice day." You know, you have a nice day. Yeah. So
absolutely.
I don't even think he needs to use the global entry, but it's up to him, you know. So I'll just tell him, you know, either way.
It's a convenience for those who travel an awful lot internationally.
Yeah, there you go. Good enough.
Okay.
Thank you.
To you, Michael.
All righty. Thank you so very much. Before we get going with Q&A, we'll start with this. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, to raise your hand. Press star 2 on your keypad. And when you do that, you will pop up on the front of my monitor that I'm looking at and place you into a queue where I can unmute your phone and give you the opportunity to ask a question or make a comment. For those of you on Freedoms Radio, you'll notice in the center right of your monitor the silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. Left-click into it, type away your comment or question. Underneath that rectangle, you see a place to put your name and some other information, then hit Submit. When you hit Submit, it pops up on my end and lets me know that there's your question, and then I'm happy to give voice to it. So while that's populating, I have a couple things to say. I want to remind everyone, tomorrow night we're going to have a very special guest speaker. This special guest speaker will be joining Mr. Slevin, and this special guest speaker is a gentleman who offers a co product to Mr. Slevin's LLC, wherein you're able to pay for them to create for your Mr. Slevin's LLC a creditworthy establishment upwards to $1 million. So for $50,000, they can create your put your LLC in a position where it qualifies for a $1 million loan, basically, is what it amounts to. And this gentleman goes by a unique and probably familiar name. It is Ron Burgundy. Ron Burgundy. For those of you that may remember that, he's just another anchorman. Just another anchorman. But anyways, that's what he wants to go by, and that's what we're going to call him. So with that having been said, I reminded you of that. Oh, all right, so here's something that I wanted to run before John here, and that is this. Anytime that law enforcement or government requires my signature, I always write above my name, all rights reserved, no rights waived, and then underneath that, I will sign my name. How is that different from non-assumpsit? Or should I modify what I write, all rights reserved, no rights waived, and then continue with non-assumpsit?
There is a discrete difference. The discrete difference is that if there is an allegation, you're denying the allegation. If they're implying a contractual responsibility with that signature, you're denying the contractual responsibility, and not just denying it, but you're also indicating that you may have signed under duress. Okay? And let's see here. I believe I have I'm trying to see where I had a letter from here, hold on. I'm looking to see if I've still got this letter that I had that was a I had a okay, here it is. I've got it. Here's the letter. Okay. This is a 1999 letter, John Corwin, which is the Attorney General for the state of Texas back in 1999, to, the House of Representatives Committee on Judicial Affairs. And, it was from the House of Representatives Committee on Judicial Affairs, from Stefona Thompson, and she was asking, she was confirming that the effect of the words non-assumpsit or means it is forced to sign her to threat, duress, coercion, and how does this have on the official state of Texas documentation on signatory places where the words for the individual signature required? Does this action also constitute a voidable signature? Is the signature legally binding or valid, or could the additional terms be added to make it valid or binding? And what effect do the words non-assumpsit to the contents of this document placed into a signature have on an official state document? Does such an action constitute the voidable signature, and is such a signature legally binding or valid? Could the additional terms be added to make, okay, and this is the chair of the House of Representatives Committee on Judicial Affairs asking this of the Attorney General for the state of California. And I have this letter right in front of me. And his response was that, yes, if there is a contract involved, it is voidable. You know, and it is indicating that they are signing under duress. Or that they feel they're being forced to sign under threat or duress and or coercion. Which makes the signature automatically null and void. That was back then, John Corwin, Attorney General for the state of Texas. Okay? So, there's a teeny bit of difference. There's a discrete difference in the way you signed regarding the question that you asked, and non-assumptions. Did that help, Michael?
Yes. Now, would you agree that then I could make that inclusive to all rights reserved, no rights waived?
All rights reserved, no rights waived, signed, non-assumptive.
Yeah.
John Q, okay. John Q, it's me.
Okay. Thank you. I'd like a copy of that letter, if I may. I think I'll print it.
Yeah. Actually, I'm looking for the response to that letter right now that I had. I've got the letter from the House of Representatives. In fact, you know what? I'll send that to you right now.
Thank you, sir.
Request lines are open. Next
right,
call.
So we start with Charlie, and then we go to Jennifer. And then we may have either Anne Marie or Raven. I'm not sure which at this time. Go ahead, Charlie.
Oh, okay. Thank you. And to continue, my question was, well, anyway, I wasn't clear on, so when signing a document, I'm not real clear on when I should be aware to do this, but the non-assumpsit, originally you were, can you describe how you would do it? Rather than me ask the question, just say, I'm not sure if my signature goes in there and then the words, I think it does, but would you describe again, John, how to do that? And is it maybe better to do the all rights reserved and rights waived plus the non-assumpsit? Would that be advisable?
The all rights reserved, no rights waived, I have seen places where that addition to non-assumpsit, is helpful. The non-assumpsit there's a difference between the A word and the B word. You understand that, right? The A word and, according to Merriam-Webster, means please include including the following. The word B word, but, means disregard all the aforementioned in favor of that which is about to be propounded. It's like, I don't mean to be late, and you can just, but, and then you can just roll right in there, but you're going to anyway. Or, I don't mean to be rude, but, you know, but you're going to anyway. there are additional benefits to all rights reserved, no rights waived. If there's any contractual application toward your citizenship and your sovereignty, then that has some benefit. Please, when you're signing like that, always do it with the most wonderful, warm smile on your face. And if the officer says, what are you writing on there? It says, I'm writing all rights reserved, no rights waived, non-assumption. And I'm writing it, you notice, above my name so that my signature is inclusive, indicates that this is inclusive and this is what I'm signing for. I'm honored and pleased to sign your document that you've requested me to sign here. I'll hand it back to you now. Just be as pleasant as possible. And once again, for anyone who may not be completely certain of what I'm sharing, I want you to absolutely, without fail, reach out to Michael sometime and ask him for some links to some of these YouTube videos and the traffic stops and things, especially the one in Utah. I believe there was, he left with 12 more orifices than he came with. On the pistol or rifle range, we call that a very bad day, you know, at the range. But please, you know, if any of you have any questions about, you know, my encouragements about, etiquette and how you respond and the respect you give to our hired help, the ones that we've hired and we've paid. You know, I may not personally sign that guy's check, but I'm one of the people that hired and paid him, you know, and if none of us, forget that, life will be a whole lot easier for those guys doing their job. And then when their job gets easier, our life becomes a lot more pleasant. Go ahead.
Yeah, John, let me restate what I think you said and to answer my question. So above my name, when I sign Charlie and last name, above that, it would be well to write or print all rights reserved, comma, no rights waived, comma, non-assumpsit. Then my signature. Is that correct?
Now that we're going to author the War and Peace there and, you know, and write a letter to Congress on it. Okay, so be it. And to that end, sometimes that's the way it's referred to, you know, somebody issuing a letter to Congress. But, I encourage individuals to, keep it as candid and succinct as possible. If you want to write that all out, sometimes that appears very adversarial and there's not, sometimes not enough room on the new, tickets that are, on a printer, meaning that you sign a digital signing tablet there and then it prints it out. If you want to go ahead and write that out and you feel that the situation warrants it, absolutely. But if there's not room or the situation probably doesn't warrant it, just simply write non-assumption.
Now, does that go above my signature or instead of my signature or below my signature?
When you sign a document, what are you signing for? Are you signing for everything that's stated above it or everything that's stated below it?
Yeah, I would think everything above it.
You're correct. I would agree with you. And so do most judiciary, et cetera. So it would have to go above it.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify.
Having said that, some of the forms that they have, you know, it's like that joke about the complaint form. It says, complaint form, please write clearly and legibly in the box below. And there's a box that's 1/4 inch high and 3/8 inch wide, you know,
sure.
For your,
right.
Sometimes signing the ticket, you actually have to sign, below the line if you put non-assumption above it or, you know, all rights reserved, no rights waived, you know. And so, just make sure that, you know, you leave enough room. And if the officer says, what are you doing? thank you for asking. I appreciate, it does my heart good to the fine job that you're trying to do. And I want you to know that, I do disagree with some of this, but I respect the job you're doing. But in no way does my disagreement translate to a displeasure with the way you do your job. I'm very pleased that you work hard and put everything, you do your job to the best of your ability and with all your zeal and all your might. And I'm compelled right now, because I do disagree with this, to write this on here. Thank you. Is that okay? Thank you. And just treat them with dignity and respect. Kill them with kindness, as my mom used to say.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right.
You're welcome.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, Charlie. Next is Jennifer. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Hi, Jonathan and Martin and Michael.
Hey, young lady, how you doing?
Pretty good. So, on a land tax check or something like that, would you write non-assumpsit instead of all rights reserved, no rights waived, or would you write all three, or just the two that I normally write? The all rights reserved, no rights waived.
Now, Jennifer, the thing that's very, very important is that some people only remember one thing or two things. And if they only remember all rights reserved, no rights waived, that's what I encourage them to use.
All right.
At this juncture, I'll tell you this right now. If you can remember to use all three and do it that way, hey, power to you, girl, sick 'em doggy. But sometimes you don't have enough room. I have chosen to go with non-assumption. Okay.
Sorry, what did you say before non-assumption? I didn't get that.
I have personally chosen to go the route of non-assumption.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear the I have personally chosen. All right. Thank you. And
okay.
The other question is, I want to send some sort of notification to the IRS about the 1040. And now that I've already written a letter asking them, am I required to pay because I'm an American national now, with no response. And so, should I just leave it at that or write another letter? And if I do write another letter, should I include a unsigned 1040 that's blank, unsigned 1040 that has my regular whatever I would be doing?
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I stop you there? Would that be okay?
I will allow that.
Well, you're very gracious. Okay, you can stay. can you send me a copy of the letter that you've already sent them? And what we'll do is we'll see if we can help facilitate the next communication to them, okay?
Okay. Great. Thanks.
Okay. Anything else, girl?
Oh, I thought you were going to say something. Yes, I was just going to say, can I have an appointment at some point regarding all the documents I sent to you?
Oh, yes. I'm just starting to catch up. I had to travel for the last 3 or 4 weeks. I've had to do quite a bit of traveling for students, and I've traveled both almost all the way to both coasts and parts in between. So I've been a teeny bit busy, and I apologize. It's my bad that I haven't been able to work you in on that. I'm thinking that probably Tuesday or this coming Wednesday, not tomorrow Wednesday, but the following Wednesday, I'd like to schedule at least, yours is going to need at least an hour, probably, and I'd prefer in the morning on Wednesday. If we could schedule you for possibly Wednesday the 26th, Michael, if you could put Jennifer Sue in for, I think I have, see, it looks like I have the 10 o'clock Central Time open on Wednesday the 26th. If you could schedule Jennifer Sue on that, that would be a blessing.
Copy that.
Do you want me to send the document again that morning or the night before, or?
Yes, yes, please. Absolutely. I only get about between 1,100 and 1,400 email a day. I never used to say 1,400 until today. I got 1,403. And go figure, huh?
You're too popular.
Pardon?
You're too popular.
Yeah, people just love to send me junk mail, you know. oil well. Like they say in Texas. Let's see. And if we could do 10 a.m. Central Time, I just plugged you into my 10 a.m. Central on the. On the 26th, under my calendar.
Okay.
Oh, thank you, girl.
All
right. Take care of yourself.
You too. Bye, John. Bye.
Back to you, Michael.
All righty. Thank you, Jennifer Sue. And now we have Parties Unknown. Go ahead, Party Unknown. Tell us who you are.
Good evening. This is Raven. How you doing, everyone?
Oh, my gosh. Hi, Raven.
Good evening.
Good evening.
John, the question that I have is when I got pulled over and I received the traffic citation, I was not aware of using non-assumptive. So I had written under duress. And when I handed that to the young police officer, he's like, what are you doing? The judge is going to be so mad. I said, I'm just, you know, using my right to sign it like that. And he was so mad, and he just, like, turned around and walked away from the car. But so my question is, writing under duress, is that giving me the same protections as if, though, I wrote non-assumptive? I mean, in the future, if I had to ever do that again, I definitely would write non-assumptive because it has so much more protections. But since I didn't, would I stand?
You know what? I am going to, while you're talking, I am going to look at the internet here, and I'm going to see what the I'm going to look up the definition of non-assumptive on the internet while we're talking here, because I think when I described what we were talking about earlier, I think I under duress is part of the definition of non-assumptive. Okay. Let's see. Yes. And actually, it's the words forced to sign under threat, duress, or coercion or non-assumption for the contents of the document written under the person's signature. The state document may indicate that the person signing has not agreed to the terms of the document and consequent this. So, yes. And that's a... And I was I just found the response letter from John Corwin. Michael, I know I sent one of the one from the Senate committee chairperson Stefona, and I'll send the other one John Corwin's response to you. I just pulled it up. But, yes, basically, did you already get the other one, by the way?
Yes.
Okay, good. I'll send this one in a little bit. But basically, you signed the same thing. Now, you remember early on when I explained where the etymology of non-assumption came from and why it came into such wide use. It was because of the mishandling by a Georgian prosecutor that they said he intentionally misconstrued it in court, in intent with malice, actually, that was later he was charged with, that they took the released in your own recognizance or the personal responsibility bond, PR bond, part of that away from that, and he construed it to imply that they were already agreeing and that the person was already guilty when they got to trial or to their hearing. That has long since pretty much gone away. Right now, most judiciary, and there are some of those cases that went all, two of them went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they're, we haven't been actually fighting the quote unquote non-assumption thing per se as far as guilty about the ticket. If you use non-assumption, it usually means because, you're challenging something else. And if you, and which begs the question, what else would you be challenging? In this case, would it possibly be jurisdiction? Especially if you're an American national or a foreign national. Okay? And in that case, the use of non-assumption. You know, and so the officer, instead of letting him start to smolder and get all upset, oh, young man, it looks like you're getting upset. Please don't think that. I'm an American national, and technically, by United States Code, I cannot be charged with a crime by with which there is not an injured party with justiciable standing and a verified complaint. And presently, neither you nor the state of Florida or North Carolina or West Virginia or Alaska has justiciable standing, and they're not an injured party with justiciable standing to charge me for this ticket for turning left on a red light, you know. You can't, you know, for walking my elephant not inside the crosswalk. I respect your efforts to keep the peace and the safety in the community, and I'm just putting this down there so that when we get to the judge, so that he'll understand that I disagree with this, and so when we get to the prosecutor, that I disagree with this, but I want you to know that I support you, and I'm honored and pleased to accept whatever ticket you choose to write. Well, I only say that because those are the exact words that I use.
Okay. Understood. Thank you. I have another question, if I may. So in that situation where it so escalated because of this young boy, she was blessed and fortunate to get you on the phone. And sometimes in a situation, someone may not get you on the phone. And if somebody else is escalating the situation, if someone is in that situation, what would you recommend that they do to de-escalate that?
That's a very good question. And you now, the first thing that we have to identify who's escalating it. Officer, this young lady or my mother does not speak for me. My mother is well-meaning, and she loves me dearly, and please understand that she's my mother, and I love her dearly, and that or this is my best friend, and he doesn't speak for me. I respect and appreciate him dearly, and he only wants for my best, and he may be a little ignorant of my situation and my status. So with that, I want you to know that I unconditionally respect you and your authority and appreciate your efforts to protect and serve. That means a lot to me. And if you'd like to invite me out of the car, it'd be my honor and privilege to step out, and you and I can talk behind the car or near your patrol car. Just whatever would please you. And if you say that exactly that way, that other person is going to realize that while you didn't say it out loud, put a sock in it, Mom. Yeah. It's never right to tell Mom to put a sock in it, but I mean, not so many words you just did, you know. But that way they realize, you know, that, and you're doing it, and in front of that other person, remember, you've got a friendship relationship or a family relationship or a husband and wife relationship or a best friend relationship. You've got another relationship there. So you can't throw them under the bus. You know, so you have to do this respectfully. Now you're learning a new level of diplomacy. You're de-escalating the situation while at the same time maintaining the friendship. Okay. And you're identifying that, you know what? They may not fully understand my status, and they love me. My mom loves me dearly, and my best friend really appreciates me dearly. And they're just thinking for my best. And an officer, if you'd like, so that we don't get any confusion, if you'd like to invite me to step out of the car and walk back by your patrol car or by the back of my car, so we can talk without interference, it'd be my honor and privilege to do so. That's how you de-escalate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And if the friends get a little tense, I'm going to tell you something. It beats ending up with not just one or two sheriff's vehicles, but eight of them, and then eventually two California Highway Patrol vehicles with their guns, their holsters unsnapped. Diane said when she looked back, most of them had their hand on their gun and their holster was unsnapped. Some of them had their guns out. Okay.
That's a scary situation. Very scary.
Yeah.
And it's a shame. You know, it's a shame. You have these people, they do not understand what they're saying, and they make it worse for everybody else that's doing what they're supposed to be doing and have the correct status. And I'm sad that that boy got shot. I mean, that's terrible.
That young gentleman thought he was being helpful to Diane. He believed that he was being chivalrous and helpful. They called me the next day. He was absolutely certain that when I was trying to de-escalate the situation that I was dead wrong and these guys were criminals and should have all been arrested.
Mm.
He believed that.
All right.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Back to you, Michael.
All right. Baruch, Bruce, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys tonight? Sounds like you're
fantastic.
On fire.
Welcome back.
Thanks. Okay. So just to split hairs again, as I do, the term non-assumption, is it non-assumption, T-I-O-N, or non-assumptive, T-I-V-E?
Okay, say that again, please.
The term you're using to, and when you put, like, in the bottom of a ticket, non-assumption, and then your signature, or is it non-assumptive? Or am I missing what you're saying? I'm hard of hearing, so I'm trying to make sure I get the term right.
Okay. Thank you. That's a very good question. And I guess you might have not heard me as well as I could have. Sometimes my diction is a little poor, And at the beginning.
No, your addiction is fine. I have measurable hearing loss. So I'm putting hairs to make sure I get it right.
Oh, absolutely. Stick it to me. Make sure I get it right. Hey, you know what? I mean, put the fireplace poker to me. Make sure I'm doing it right. Okay. The term assumption. Remember I said the word assume. Instead of, you know, ass of you and me, instead of having the E on the end, having a P as in Papa, a sump.
Okay.
With it. Instead of an E, it's a P, and then sit, like sitting down or sitting in your car seat. Non-assumption. And I'll read.
Okay, so it's A-S-S-U-M-P-T-I.
S-I-T. A-S-S.
Check your phone. All right. I texted it to you, Bruce.
A-S-S-U-M-P.
S-I-T.
Non-assumptive. Okay, that's what I kept seeing on the internet when I was looking it up. So it's non-assumptive.
Okay, and to help you, I'm going to read the summary from the Attorney General John Corwin's summary of his on his letter off of page 4, and it's three lines. Here it goes. Summary: the words "quote unquote" forced to sign under threat, comma duress and coercion, close quote, or, and this is where our last caller, or quote unquote non-assumption to the contents of this document written under a person's signature or on the state document may indicate that the person signing has not agreed to the terms of the document, comma, and consequently there has been no, and this is John, the Attorney General's words, no quote unquote meeting of the minds that is necessary to form a binding agreement. Very truly yours, John Corwin. This is the summary of a 4-page letter that was returned to State Representative Thompson for the Stefano was the chairman of the House of Representatives Committee on Judicial Affairs, and we're using their words. Now this letter was written less than 6 months after she authored this, and I sat with John in committee on the rulesmaking committee at the Republican Senatorial Convention in 2000, and this is where I originally my first gaze at his response to her inquiry was. And my then 6-year-old son, John Arthur, he was sitting right beside me, and I was 2 chairs down from John Corwin in committee when he shared this with me.
That's
we had
great.
Just got done talking, you know. So, there's a – and John Corwin was very, very friendly. This is the state attorney general for the state of Texas back in 1999. He is very constructive and very friendly and very sympathetic to the individuals that use or write the term non-assumption. Okay, and so,
I have hearing aids.
Go ahead.
So, let me clarify again. It sounds like you're saying non-assumption, but
non-assumption. On non-assumption, yeah, as in SIT, as I'm sitting on it.
Got it. And is there a dash between non and assumption?
You can put one in there, but it's a you can put one in there. But it doesn't have to be, and it isn't always there.
Okay. I got it now, and I got rid of all my little sticky notes with the wrong ones in there, and now I've got the right one. So thank you.
Okay. An honor and a privilege. Okay. Back to you, Michael, sir.
Well, we're bringing up now with Tommy Mills. Tommy, here you go, Tommy. Trying to get this unmuted.
That and without prejudice, all rights reserved and nothing waived.
Hey, say that again, Tommy.
What is the difference between that, non-assumption, and without prejudice, all rights reserved, nothing waived?
You know what? Those, in a roundabout way, Tommy, they're saying the same things. Non-assumption has become the one-stop shopping center for basically all of those terms. And it encompasses all of those individual terms basically define the overall term non-assumption. And that's why I've said you can use either or you can even use both. Because I've read the definition of non-assumption a couple of times already tonight, and it includes those terms in the definition. In fact, you know what? I'm going to look up Black's Law right now and just let's see. And let's see here. Okay. I just, because I just got a brand new first edition Black's Law. It's all the same. Okay. It's okay. The general issue action assumption, meaning plea for which the defendant avers that he did not undertake or promise as alleged by the plaintiff. Non-assumption. And that's the Black's Law first edition. Whoa, holy kitty litter, Batman. It's identical in the 11th edition. Whoa. That's not real common that it's identical across multiple. Whoa, it's even identical in the 5th edition too. Okay, this is cool. I was looking in the 10th edition because that's the hard copy I have in my lap right now. But you can use any of those, Tommy.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. That's all.
Back to you, Michael. Thank you, Tommy.
All right, our last caller for the evening is back to Charlie. Go ahead.
Yes. John, if I heard you correctly, when you were reading the summary by the Attorney General for Texas,
John
Cornell, I believe, yes, I believe you said, or read, that you may want to read the line again to me, but that non-assumption was under the signature. I must have misheard that.
Yes, you know what? In his summary, in John Corwin's summary, he did say underneath, and I will reread that, the summary. Here it is. The words force assigned in the threat to race accord, unquote, non-assumption to the contents of this document written under a person's signature on a state document may indicate, and yes, you're right, John put it underneath. And usually the signature is after everything that you're agreeing to by contractual law. And I don't know why John said signed underneath. It's clear that there may be some differing views on it. I was going through what I was taught when in law school, that when you sign on a document, you're only signing for anything that is above your signature. You know what? But you're right. Thank you. That was a very, very good catch there. Thank you.
Well, thank you for reviewing that.
All righty.
Okay.
All right. Anything else, Charlie?
Nope. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. One more time, I want to remind everyone tomorrow night, very, very important, to show up with Mr. LLC's special guest. And it's for those of you that are entrepreneurs, this is absolutely critical. You know what it's like to make a trip to the bank and try to present your case as to why they should loan you money, and this gets rid of all that nonsense. So, and I think by the time you have closing costs and everything else, you're not talking a whole lot of difference in net amount differences in money. All right, so, John, any closing comments before we go?
It's there's an old saying, it's to a wise man's glory to overlook an offense. Sometimes people do things that may abrade you, may even hurt you, may even injure you. Sometimes there may be wisdom in overlooking not just their unkindness, but maybe even their arrogance or the rudeness. We've had a couple of students that have had some character building exercises because someone jumped in their rice bowl and they didn't feel very good about it, and it hurt. And it didn't just hurt, it cut to the quick. And we had some that have overlooked the offense in spite of how bad and how painful it was. They treated the constabulary with dignity and respect, and they came out unbelievably unscathed in manners that you wouldn't believe. We had one gentleman from Arizona, multiple felony grand jury indictments. He was very kind about it. He treated those people with an unequivocally considerate amount of respect and kindness. That those grand jury indictments were dismissed before he was actually officially arraigned. We've had some that also similar situation, and the grand jury indictments in these cases involved non-legal recreational pharmaceuticals, because there was a little bit of a different attitude, not even the district attorney will let go of this. There is a it's awful how they're unkind they are. If you can overlook maybe the officer or the deputy having a bad day, that's a good thing for you. Okay. Look at them as they're trying to, as a public servant, trying to do their job the best way they can, the best way they know how. With that, may the Most High King's blessings. Now, still one more. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is one of your favorite students here, Nicholas. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Good afternoon, sir, or good evening. How you doing?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Hi, I just had one quick question. I think I got a little clarification on it before, but I just wanted to get a more definitive answer on credit and loans once one has corrected their status, or what your opinion or what you might do in that situation.
Okay, as in borrowing money?
Yeah, I kind of have been told multiple things, and so I obviously try to avoid it in general, but from my understanding, it helps out in our modern society, and I wasn't quite sure whether it's, you know, able to be used, or like you mentioned earlier on the call, should I wait and set something up with through the LLC instead?
Okay, you were breaking up a little bit for me. Ask that question a little different way.
So I think you mentioned on the call earlier about credit and, or maybe Michael brought it up, but about credit and how through the LLC, if I understand it correctly, you can establish a line of credit to use effectively. But I was asking, is there any other way to do that once you've corrected your status?
Okay. Excellent question. Unbelievably excellent question. Tomorrow night's call, Mr. Schlevens, he's going to cover once again how to get that. And he has an unbelievable program. And I'll tell you that some of the information providers and staff are products of his product. I'll tell you that right now. My son uses his product, his LLC. And, but there are, if Nicholas, if you sit on Schlevin's call tomorrow, you're going to learn some things that will show you there are some teensy-weensy baby step ways that you may be able to do that, but you've got to sit on that call, and you actually, you, if I could humbly implore you to be a regular on that call on Wednesday night, that question will become very transparent to you, and you'll understand exactly what is required to successfully do that, and you'll know exactly how. But the thing is that you have to absolutely have the background, you know, and the groundwork to be able to do that, okay? And it's not something that's easily answered just, in one sentence, okay?
All right, thank you. I'll, be joining the Wednesday night calls every night.
Okay. Okay, in closing, anyone who would like a copy of those two letters that I talked about tonight, check with Michael. The John Corwin response letter to the original letter from the House Representatives Committee of Judicial Affairs inquiry. Check with Michael. He has those freely for the distribution. For those of you who would like some sobering wisdom on traffic stops, this is not for the faint at heart. But also check with Michael. Thank you. Back to you, Michael.
All righty. Thank you all for joining us. Until tomorrow night, good night all, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you.